This is WHQR Presents, where we platform interesting people and perspectives from around the region. Today's show is From a Poet's Point of View, featuring artists organized by Speak Your Piece NC, hosted by Melanie Nicole, a.k.a. Carrie Asada, and featuring guests Robert Bellamy, a.k.a. Scale Hamhock the Poet, Makeda Baker, a.k.a. Mama Makeda, and Anna Lee, Director of Learning and Development at Working Films. This episode was recorded on September 25th to discuss National Literacy Month and the anniversary of the 16th Street Baptist Church bombings. That was the tragic 1963 terrorist attack by a white supremacist group that claimed the lives of four black girls. This program contains some challenging topics and some explicit language, so while we hope you'll enjoy, we do encourage some listener discretion. And a quick note, while WHQR is committed to sharing voices from around our community, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast series don't necessarily represent WHQR.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Malaney Cooper, a.k.a. Carrie Asada. I'm the founder of Speak Your Piece North Carolina. And we are so delighted to be here today at WHQR Studios. Before we begin to start, can we show Ben Shockman of WHQR some love? We like to do this by snapping, and we're so very appreciative of this station, the work that WHQR does, and the opportunity to be able to share some thoughts from Speak Your Piece North Carolina, which is a organization located in Eastern North Carolina where we create platforms that advocate for social equity through the arts. And I don't know if anyone that I'm speaking with today that when throughout this conversation, if you are not aware, September is National Literacy Month, and it's important that we read, and it's important that we do activities surrounded around reading, which would be to have conversations, to write poetry, and just to be able to get connected to literacy, because we need to read good books. Everyone should be reading a good book that is informative and at the same time allowing for you to make your decisions yourself on a lot of different things that are happening throughout this society. So I'm so excited to have everyone here today. And before we get started, Mama Makeda, would you mind sharing some libations with us and then just kind of explaining to anyone that might just be listening what a libation is?
Hotep, and thank you. Thank you. Pleased to be here. Pleased to be present and part of the panel. A libation in traditional African society, a libation is the calling upon, the calling forth, and asking for the presence of the ancestors. That is, before any meeting or any ceremony or any instance of significance takes place, there's always a calling upon and an acknowledgement of those who have gone before us. And that's called a libation. That is called a libation. And in traditional African society, it's understood that life exists on three levels: those who have gone before us and now reside within the earth, those of us who yet walk on top of the earth, and those yet to come, the unborn. And that is a libation. So just for the next moment, let us join hands symbolically and physically if we can, as we do this libation. We say Geru Nefer, we Jed Ma'at, we Er Ma'at. And we call upon our Netchers in acknowledgement of their presence. We call upon Nuet, our heavens, Hapi, our holy waters, Geb, our mother earth, Shu, our sacred air, Mut, our sacred mother principle, Nut, our beloved sky, Tameri, our beloved land. We say Aimanja, Chiri Sudor. We say Sia Ekasia Ekpatunetjeru, Ankwa Sonet Med, Mire Jedank Shishanki Jehudi Ma'at, Re Shekem Ma'at Ma'akiru. Duwa Pata, Duwa Heru, Duwa Heru Ubin, Tawi. This is our Wahimimasu, our path and our patah to restoration. It's within this consciousness. It's within this gathering, within this meeting, within this moment that we jed ma'at, we air ma'at. That is, we speak truth and we do truth as we honor the ancestors. Hotep, Ashe, Ashe, and Hotep. Hotep family.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mama Makeda, for that. It's very important that we acknowledge our ancestors. And I'm very appreciative anytime you take the time out, Mama Makeda, so that we can remember them through doing libations. And with it being a National Literary Month, I thought that it would be a good idea to have some of our discussions formed around literacy and different people who work in that area of literacy. So today I'm so happy to have my friend Anna Lee here with us, who is the Director of Learning and Development at Working Films. And I just want to give everyone just a bit of an idea about Working Films, the work that they do, and then we'll break into conversation. So for those of you who may not have ever heard of Working Films, it's actually a national organization, and Working Film leverages the power of documentary films to advance social justice and environmental protection. And so it's very important that we allow for art to just do what it does, and that is to give us insight into the lives of people, and especially the many different things that are going on within this society. At Working Films, they position documentaries to increase civic engagement and shift culture at the local, state, and unrepresented, underrepresented filmmakers, which, you know, when you live in an oppressive society, no one is going to be out there just giving you money so you're able to shut the system down. So most organizations that are nonprofits, they do need funding, just like WHQR. So anyone that might be listening, if you might feel yourself being generous, just keep in mind WHQR, Working Films, and also Speak Your Peace North Carolina are also organizations that we need your funding. And so with September being the anniversary of the four little girls who were tragically murdered in Birmingham, we're going to touch on that because Mama Makeda has a poem that is going to connect us to the literacy that we are talking about during this discussion. And I guess I would love to start off with Anna, since she's our guest. Can we all show Anna some love by giving her some snaps?
All right. Hotep.
And you. I want to ask you, Anna Lee, how did you begin to do the work that you're doing, and what promoted you to decide that you want to be part of an organization that tells stories through filming?
Yeah, thanks. So I come to Working Films not from a film background. Mm. I loved movies and great storytelling, but I'm not a filmmaker. But really came to the work because I was involved in community organizing and social justice work, and also because I was a teacher. And in a way, I kind of stumbled onto Working Films. Actually, really, honestly, like directly through activism. So we're, as you said, based here in Wilmington, North Carolina, and for its first years, the organization was housed in this awesome old firehouse, like 1910 building. In addition to hosting Working Films, the organization let other community-based groups use the space. So it was this kind of real collected place. And I happened to be in a group that was a peace group. It was during the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and I was part of a group that was doing peace work and anti-war organizing. And we were at a meeting there one day, and that's how I got to know Working Films, because someone was like, you should actually like know about this organization that's here doing this work and uses storytelling as a way to, you know, get more people involved in the very kind of thing we were already there doing. So in some ways it was really serendipitous. But my direct entry, I guess, into it was because I'd been a teacher, I taught elementary school, and Working Films had an awesome project at that time where it was using short film clips to help kids, or really, yeah, eighth grade students, but ultimately adults too, learn more about Latino community and immigration in North Carolina. Okay. And I got hired initially to come on and just like support work on that project, helping to get it out to other educators and teachers. Wow. And so, yeah, I really came rooted into it and have learned all the sort of film world stuff from there. And I think that's really like who we are as an organization. Our, you know, the folks that work at Working Films are a good mix of people who kind of come from the film world and people who come from organizing. And that's what we are. We're really a bridge between the two worlds, because the whole idea of the organization is, as you said, great storytelling, whatever form, film, poetry, novels, it leaves us, you know, with the powerful emotion. And what we say is we're there to answer that question of what can I do when the lights come up to, you know, you left after you see a great film and you're like,
wow,
what, you know, can I learned something new, but what can I do now? And so we answer that question by connecting audiences to people doing that work.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anna. That's wonderful. And I just want to ask, since we're on the topic of film and we have Anna here representing Working Films, is there a film that ties the work of equity and I would probably say oppression or just a lot of the social issues that we experience here? Mama Makeda, is there a favorite film of yours that is a teaching film that's educational, but also goes into the history and, you know, the way that art has a way of revealing? Is there a favorite film that you have that you'd like to share?
You know, Lainey, you have the knack to ask the most interesting, spontaneous questions that cause the brain to have to go, what is, okay, how do I answer that? But as you were asking that question, my favorite actress came to mind, and that was Cicely Tyson. Mm. And there was not any film back in the 70s or 80s that she appeared in that literally did not imitate life. I specifically think on the movie she did called The Story of Miss Jane Pittman, and the exact title leaves me at the moment, The Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, in that she sought to bring history, which is real life, she sought to bring history to the screen to educate so many. So that immediately, she sprang to mind when, as you began to ask that question, in that movies that only entertain but do not inform or educate or motivate or empower, I think those movies do a disservice to the public in general. But if a movie can educate, inform, empower, and motivate, then that movie has certainly been an artful movie and served the public well.
Wow, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Mama Makeda. And Scale Hamhock, the poet, who also goes by Robert Bellamy, is the co-founder of Speak Your Peace North Carolina. And I want to ask you, Scale Hamhock, the poet, do you have a particular movie that you'd like to maybe share with us?
Wow. I love so many movies. I also love plays. I want to share this particular play with you by Deborah Tibbs. And the reason why I want to share is because I it was the first play that I was able to act in. And I did the character of Deborah Tibbs. And by doing that, it inspired me to find out more about acting, feminine actors, and just everything that was going on here in Wilmington. And it gives you also a chance to rethink how you want to, you know, finish your life. I'm 66 at this time, and now I am doing all the things that I wanted to do. And I'm meeting all the people that I need to meet here in this city. And Anna, well, it's just great meeting Anna. You know, Anna has, you know, she's been around for a minute. She knows the city. She knows the film. She's worked with students. And she has done so many things. And I'm right here with Speak Your Peace North Carolina with Lainey, a.k.a. Karis Sada, a very good friend of Anna's. And I'm here today just to observe and just to listen. And I want Anna to inspire me even more. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I have to say, Robert, he doesn't give up his talking for anybody, Anna. So I have to tell you, you're special because...
I feel incredibly honored for that.
Yeah, he's always running his mouth. So, you know, for him to decide to kind of chill for a moment, I have to say I'm excited about that. Because I talk to Robert all the time because I'm married to him. So Anna, I want to turn that question over to you. Is there a favorite movie that you have, or a play, or a novel, just anything related to literacy that you might want to share with us?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's really hard to pick from, you know, even just all the films we work with or other projects. But one that comes to mind that... folks may have seen or heard of, is called Crip Camp. And you, I think, can still watch that on Netflix.
Wow.
But it's an amazing documentary that is about, made by people who attended, and is about a camp that I believe is in upstate New York somewhere in the Northeast. Mm-hmm. There was a summer camp for people with disabilities, for kids and teens with disabilities in the... like in the 60s, I'm pretty sure. And but it just upends every assumption and stereotype that people might have about people with disabilities. Mm. It is was a formative space for people who became like leaders in the disability rights movement, and became, you know, yeah, some of the folks that got like the ADA passed. And it was basically like a bunch of hippies and a bunch of young people who just created this, like, amazing community. And they have all this incredible footage from then that was shot at the time. And I think importantly, again, like, the folks who are in the film, like, were the people who made it, are people with disabilities, their crew was rooted in that. So also just, like, rooted in people telling their own story. Which I think is like so much of what we need for when we're thinking about how films and other writing like can make change, right? Because historically, who's had the power and access to do that that has not been true. And so, yeah, I love that film both just because it's like amazing and fun and to watch, but also for all those reasons.
And give us that title one more time.
It's called Crip Camp, and the filmmaker's name is Jim Lebrecht. And I can send it if you want to put it in the show notes, a link to it.
Oh,
but
okay.
It's on Netflix.
I'll do that. I think that would be helpful so that anyone listening is able to find out exactly what it is that we want to share with them by taking some time out to to maybe view something that you never thought about viewing before. And we're all in this earth together, so it's important that, you know, we understand other people who are around us. And with that being said, I would just like to share a quote by Ava DuVernay, who is a director. She actually directed 13th and Selma. I know 13th was on Netflix for some time. Mm-hmm. It might still be there, but I would recommend anyone who wants to be informed to see 13th. It's very informative. And of course, Selma is just some more real life history. And Ava quoted, if your dream only includes you, it's too small. So when you hear that Mama Makeda, what comes up for you? If your dream only includes you, it's too small.
Wow. Those few words are really very telling and really, really very powerful. It speaks to the individuality versus the collectiveness of us. And if my dream includes me only, then that tells me that it's a bit self-centered, it's a bit narcissistic, and there's no room for anyone else. Part of being human is accepting one's humanity, but even more importantly, it's accepting the humanity of those around you. And if my dream does not include the collective of humanity, then again, it's very small, it's very self-centered, it's narcissistic, and it does not include the collective of humanity. I gotta use that quote. I love that. And we know that historically, melanin people come from a collective background. There is no individuality. There is no you and I and me, there's only us. So for me to want something for myself has to mean that I also want it for those around me. And if only I'm included, humanity is not part of what I'm wishing for.
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. And Spike Lee said, now Spike Lee, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, right? Because that's where I spent my teenage life. I was really introduced into Spike Lee during the 90s, being in Brooklyn. It was like you wanted to be in Brooklyn in the 90s, you know, and being introduced and immersing yourself into culture. And Spike Lee, he gave the world insight into other parts of Black life, you know, that some have not seen. Often we are stereotyped as people. And he said, I think it is very important that films make people look at what they've forgotten. And when you hear that quote, Anna, and with you being directly involved with like the shaping, wouldn't you say that you're like your mama film, Anna, you know, because your organization produces films which are actually babies, right? Creator's child. When you see your creation come to life, it's like your baby walking. So what do you think about what Spike Lee said about that he thinks that it's important that films make people look at what they've forgotten? What comes up for you?
I think that's so interesting. To me, it kind of speaks to like this idea that that in some ways we forget the most basic truths, which I think is back to in some ways what Mama Makeda just said of like that we are all connected. Mm-hmm. And that, like, often the best films when they're rooted in people's real struggles, when they're rooted in people's just a deep reality of people's lives. I mean, that's like, I think in some ways the beautiful thing about documentary is like, is it does give us this chance to like see our connection to others, to think about like for ourselves what, you know, what we know about our own experience and what we may, you know, maybe we know deeply, but actually gets lost in all the
that's
what's around us. So
the distractions.
Yeah. And, you know, attempts at, to divide us by the powerful, like that rootedness in connection that I think like we all know, like really like, you know, like we can feel it when it's really happening.
That's right.
But that, yeah, too often the way the world works and is structured around us is like keeping that reality at bay. And so, yeah, I think the best films often can like root us back in that. Yeah, and that connection to each other, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna, for sharing that. And speaking about connecting, it's like when you are living and when you're living in America, right? Because I can only speak from the standpoint of what I have lived. I can speak about the things that have happened. I feel like there are certain things that are known within my DNA. But as far as being right here today in this moment, it's important that we rest, right? That we take breaks, even just to have a conversation and get to find out what someone else is thinking, because I feel like when you're living, you're a problem solver, right? We should be solving problems when we're here. We have problems. The world has problems. So sometimes you just have to take a moment and take a break and listen. And then there are times in life where you have to find joy in each other. And that might be what we're doing right now. It might be having a poetry gathering, or it might be having an event, a party where we can all just get together and cool our heels off and just go, you know. And I have some news to share with everyone that's listening. We are having a party this month, and Working Films is going to be having a party this month. And I want Anna to let anyone that's listening to hear some more about the work and what this event will entail. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. So, yeah, Working Films has been doing this work of connecting documentary film and organizing for 25 years. Which is just wild, like every time I say it out loud, you know, like quarter century. We're going to take a minute to stop and celebrate and connect with our community. We have been doing this in a few ways this year in a couple of other places because, like, we do work around the country. But we're kind of having this big celebration here in Wilmington, which has been the home of Working Films. So it's going to be, we're calling the event Illuminating Change, because we feel like that is what our work does. And it's going to be on Friday, October 24th at 6:30 p.m. at Station Number 2, which happens to be the beautiful old firehouse that I was talking about earlier when I told my story about starting Working Films, because it was actually our office for the first, I think, 14 years of the organization. So we're kind of having a full circle moment. It's now an awesome event venue, but we're going to have the party to celebrate the anniversary right back there. And the other part of this that's awesome is that Lainey, aka Carrie Asada, is going to perform at the party and share some of her poetry with us, which is super awesome. Yeah, really excited about that. So Combo, Speak Your Piece, and Working Films event. And also for folks here in Wilmington and beyond, who might know Fuzz Jax, who's an incredible musician, along with DJ Suspense, they're going to have some music for us. So it's going to be good good food, some dancing, some poetry. Lots of folks who love art and film and social justice. So would love for folks to come out and join us. It is a fundraiser, so tickets are $50. But that gets you dinner, one free drink, and the dancing, and like I said, good company, and goes to support, I think most importantly, right, is going to support our work. So we're super excited that to be doing this, and also just that you're going to come and join us.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna. Thank you for sharing that. And I want for anyone that might be listening to come out on October the 24th, come to the firehouse, especially anyone who might be listening in Wilmington. Get involved, get to know about an organization that is deeply rooted in transforming humanity. And it's important that those who wish to come with us, that they are welcomed and they come. And transformation is it's important. So come on out on October 24th and support Working Films. Get to hear some poetry by Carrie Asada. And at this time, what I would like to do is ask Mama Makeda to share with us a poem that is connected to why we do this, why poets speak. Poets speak because we have to. We have to be able to keep the world informed on what is happening in this life that we are living. And I want to share a quote by James Baldwin. He said that the role of the artist is exactly the same as the role of the lover. If I love you, I have to make you conscious of the things you don't see. And so, Mama Makeda, we're calling upon you today, and also these young women who were assassinated far too soon. They are our ancestors, so we lift them up. And it's important that we continue to learn and understand about libations. But if you would, Mama Makeda, can you share some poetry with us? Tell us the title of your poem. And just give us some brief information on what made you write this poem.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Carrie Asada. This poem was written 23 years ago. It was written in November of 2002.
Wow.
And it was written during a time when I was really in writing mode, and the ancestors were giving me so much information as to what had occurred historically. And it was my job, it was my duty and my obligation and my responsibility to put pen to paper and record what was being given to me. And again, it was written 23 years ago. It's called Come Sunday Morn, and that's M-O-U-R-N, Come Sunday Morn. And it tells the story from beginning to end of the 16th Street Church bombing and those involved in the bombing. Come Sunday morn. September 15th, 1963. The president was John F. Kennedy. It started out as a Sunday morn for going to worship and being reborn. The September air was crisp and clean. The leaves were orange, red, and green, as beautiful a fall as Bama had seen. Goodness, Carol, you ain't even 8. Cynthia, get up. We don't want to be late. Come on, Addie, we gotta go. Hurry up, Denise. Ooh, y'all so slow. These were the sounds of that Sunday morn. Familiar, comforting, not at all foreign. Cause on Sunday morning, it was the rule in these households, you go to Sunday school. So what began as a usual September 1-5 would turn bloody and deadly as some wouldn't survive. The choir was practicing their newly learned song. The elders settled in to be there all day long. The preacher was preparing his sermon to preach. The Sunday school teacher was getting lessons to teach. Everywhere was a smile and a hi-do, a hug, a hand, and a good to see you. There was Carol, Denise, Cynthia, and Addie, Olivia, Gertrude, Martha, and Maddie. There was Philip, Willie, Fred, and John, Stanley, Joseph, Sherman, and Juan. Isn't it ironic that in a Southern segregated world, there were God-fearing, church-going, colored boys and girls? Nowhere, not anywhere in their wildest dreams, would these children have imagined that homicidal scene. Of this innocuous church with its civil rights devils being reprimanded for harboring integration rebels, would have a horror story told that ripped out and ate its very soul. The Klan had long been in search of the perfect site to bomb a church. Bomb a church and make it clear that we don't tolerate uppity Negroes here. Because our Negroes know they place, they knows they belong to an inferior race. Our Negroes know when we speak to hear us because we've trained our Negroes to fear us and we don't like no outside interference. We has to watch our Negroes like a hawk because of all of that up north freedom talk. Got Negroes talking about civil rights, thinking they's as good as us whites. So we's got for them a lesson to learn. Best way to do it, make they church burn. Make it go up in a big blast so that it'll burn down real fast and that'll be a lesson to last. And we've got to do it and do it well. So for nearly 40 years, no one will tell. There won't be no one to prosecute because all of us involved will just play mute. And both the police and the FBI won't reveal the secret of the great white lie. They'll pretend the bombing can't be solved and tell the Negroes, just be ye resolved and accept it as the Southern way for being a Negro. That's just the price to pay. As the bombers racist hands held steady, awaiting the signal. Now we's ready. The church was filling with the young and old. The preacher was proud of his religious fold. He'd preach a sermon today like no other on the unconditional love man should have for his brother. He'd preach about us all getting along, then ask the choir to join in a song with a big rousing rendition of "We Shall Overcome." So that's how it started out that Sunday morn, quiet and peaceful before the storm. For at the corner of 6th Avenue and 16th Street is where those four young girls, their deaths, would meet. It was after the devotion had just begun, the deacon board began a low hum. Before out of the bathroom, the girls could come and out of the church, everyone would run. The bombs in place, the dynamite was lit. So no matter where you were, you would take a hit. The lookout clanner from his tree perch gave the ready signal to bomb the church. When there came a loud piercing blam, followed by three boom, 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 and a bam. For just a second, there was no sound. Then all of a sudden, everything came down. Plaster and wood, concrete and stone, all sorts of debris mixed with bodies and bone. Help me, have I died? A loud but frightened voice repeatedly cried. No walls, no ceilings, only open sky. Good Lord, sweet Jesus, how many will die? The sound of screams, chaos, and wails, the devil himself must have opened up hell. Everywhere, someone was bruised and tangled. In the bathroom, four young girls lay bloodied and mangled, their bodies torn apart by the explosive force, by Klan supremacists who held no remorse. Their lives taken by evil and vice as a warning, a threat, a living sacrifice. violated, targeted, bombed, and needing 16th Street Baptist Church was hemorrhaging and bleeding. It was beyond the church's comprehension that they would be targeted for such intention. How could anyone do this to the house of the Lord, where church folk come to hear the gospel word? That didn't matter, because this was the South, where overt Klan behaviors came up and came out, where the Klan could do just as it wanted, since all whites were members and did it undaunted. And the U.S. Department of Injustice had long made it clear that the KKK didn't have a damn thing to fear. So without a conscience, the Klan could operate and hold open meetings to preach their vile race hate. And it was with this mindset that they would pick 16th Street Baptist to do their latest trick. How many bombs do a colored church need for us to complete our treacherous deed? So the best fertilizer and the best dirt with the best dynamite would cause the most hurt. So that calm Sabbath morn in September was the date chosen for history to remember. 16th Street Baptist was their final decision where the bomb would explode with precise precision. It was the signature of the Klan's hand. Couldn't have been any better plan. Shook the church's very foundation, even shook up the president of the nation. A thorn in his side for his political aspiration and fueled the civil rights movement's growing frustrations. This deadly turn of events that killed so many was given a token investigation, if any. To throw the police off the white track, the white folks said it was done by the blacks to make it seem that the whites hadn't attacked. Even said if the police would delve, they'd find that the Negroes did it to themselves. To gain sympathy for these civil rights in order to vote and sit with us whites, we still mad, don't you know? And we'll go to any lengths just to show. We'll kill your babies, your boys and girls, your young and old anywhere in this world. We'll lynch you, we'll burn you, we'll bomb you too as Southern segregationists. Ain't nothing we won't do. We'll chase you up, we'll chase you down, we'll tar and feather you and drag you through town. We'll take your women and kill your men, we'll take your houses, your land, and then, cause we still mad, can't you tell that we can't buy you and then sell? Free Negro labor to build the South. This race war, that's what it's all about. We'll bomb your church without a second thought. Yeah, we's angry without a doubt. In the 21st century, we must understand that this was the motivation behind the plan. The plan was to destroy, bomb, and rip that Negro worship place of holy worship. There were yells and screams and cries and moans, pleas for help, heaves and groans. One blind old lady who could not see sang in the rubble, "Nearer, my God, to thee." One frail, crippled, and bent old man, wheelchair overturned, prayed with his arthritic hand. Another elder with tears in his eyes sat stunned and speechless, his eyes asking why. Two of the mothers bored, their minds frozen, locked, wandered aimlessly in the debris, their bodies in shock. One choir member, still in his robe, confused and dazed, was quoting from Job. The usher board captain was still trying to greet the visitors and newcomers that she needed to see. The welcoming committee president was trapped under a log, still rehearsing his speech, his mind in a fog. The pastor's aid club had just come down the hall. Now all of them lay still under a wall. The Eastern Stars and 360-degree Masons were stunned in disbelief, their eyes gazing. The children's choir soloists had just sung, and now they was all speaking in tongues. The deacon's wives had prepared the church food. It was now blown to bits and no more good. The church's new floors and new stained glass, all for naught, destroyed in a blast. The church's tower that greeted the people stood leaning and cracked the colored steeple. The Klan's laughter almost drowned out the cries for help and all the shouts. The Klan's high fives and woo, woo, woo was their raw testimony to what they could do with full police cooperation and in most cases with police participation, could do and watch the Black folks grieve and tell them, you don't like it, God damn it, then leave. So what that mamas and daddies cried because their children, their babies were blown up and died. So what that a nation would be appalled as the Attorney General Bobby, his brother John, would call. So what that this was a civil rights crime with low priority status, ain't nobody had time. This is one more thing you must put behind. So get it out your head and get it out your mind. And so that's how it all started that Sunday morning. The September air was crisp and clean. The leaves were orange, red, and green as beautiful a fall as Bama had seen. Hotel.
Beautiful. Wow. Thank you, Mama Makeda, so much for sharing that. It's something how something is informative and true, and it touches you, and you feel it in your soul, the pain, but the necessity to hear it, because if we hide our history, we are bound to repeat it. And we can see from the way that this nation is heading that enough people are not reading, and everybody needs to raise their fists, grab a pen, grab some paper, and begin to write. You know, we need a day away from technology. We need a day to go in. And Mama Makeda, thank you so much for sharing that poem. It was absolutely a piece of history in spoken word form. Let's show Mama Makeda some more love.
Thank Hotep. You so much.
Hotep. Hotep. And Lainey, may I say that when you say the statement you made about hiding history, and the bigger picture of that is when you hide history, you hide the people behind it so that they don't exist anymore.
Wow.
And we will not be hidden. History will not be hidden. It will not. It will not.
Yes.
Thank you, Mama Makeda. We're going to be wrapping up pretty soon, but I just wanted to ask everyone if it would be okay. Audre Lorde said that poetry is not a luxury. It is a vital necessity for our existence. Do you agree with that, Scalia Mark?
Yes. Yes, I do agree with that. I never heard those words spoken in that form. But when I sit and listen, I can agree. Yes, I do agree.
Thank you. And how about you, Anna? Do you agree that poetry is not a luxury, it is a vital necessity of our existence?
I do. In all its forms, it's a poem, the poetry and music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, lately I've been reading a couple of novels that are written in verse,
wow.
Actually with my kids, that have been a great entry point. And I've really been sitting with that around how, like, you can convey so much in like just brief verse, but it's a whole, you like a whole universe. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Thank you for that. And it's important to hear that as we speak with each other, that, you know, we are not just talking it, that we're walking a walk, you know, that we are reading poetry,
yes.
That we are staying connected to the things that are going on. And Mama Makeda, poetry is not a luxury. It is a vital necessity of our existence. Do you agree on that?
Oh, absolutely. Poetry is words. And without words, there's no speech. Without speech, there's no communication. And without communication, there's no connection. So if any form of censorship of any means of communication is a means of trying to disconnect humanity from itself. So very vital, very vital. And poets tend to say what others may think, but don't have the audacity or the nerve to say out loud.
Wow.
You know, poets have a lot of nerve.
Well, thank you. I just want to thank the poets who have the audacity to speak up, to make confessions that poetry allows them to become fearless in. And I just want to thank everyone for being part of this podcast today. From a poet's point of view, I also want to remind anyone that may be listening that we do have poetry events coming up in October on the 10th and the 17th at View 21 North in Wilmington, which is located at 1002 Chestnut Street. So make sure that you come out on Friday nights at 7 p.m. to be exposed to some words that can change your life. And also, Anna, would you mind just repeating to anyone who may be coming in at the ending what's going down on October 24th?
Yeah, it's going to be another night of some great poetry and fun. Working Film's 25th anniversary celebration, October 24th at station number 2 at the corner of Castle and 5th, 6:30 p.m. If you go to workingfilms.org, you can find out more information there and how to get tickets.
Thank you. I want to thank everyone so much for speaking their piece today. And let's show Ben some more love, some more snaps.
Hotep, Ben. Hotep.
Thank you. Right?
We love WHQR and the work that they do. And I would like to just go out on this poem. And before I do that, I just want to thank Scale Hamhock, the poet, for just kind of chilling today and listening in and being an observer. That's another part of being a poet. We're not always, you know, reciting poetry. Sometimes we are observing so that we can pick up on what to write about. So I do expect to hear a poem about this event, Scale Hamhock the Poet, this, what we're doing right here and how it made you feel. So we'll talk about that the next time, what Robert came up with and how he was inspired. So we can talk about inspiration. And this poem that I'm going to share with you is called Racism is Like Rabies. Mm-hmm. And I wrote this poem because my sister got bit by a dog when we were children, running from it. And you know how life just connects. So it made sense. So the name of the poem is Racism is Like Rabies. Racism is like rabies. It affects the mind, making one aggressive, irrational, all done by design. It strips away reason, leaving a murderous trail behind, a cycle of continuous wickedness moving with time. It exposes itself through every institution, covering up, banning books, lies as the ideal solution. It causes death, leads with a torch, destroying humanity, fooling us as if we have no sense, selling American dreams with a white picket fence. Miseducation, indoctrination, feeding you full of lies, disguised as truth, passing on hatred to corrupt their youth. There is no elixir, no magic pill, no easy cure for this sickness so real, a virus, a hell of a mental dis-ease, breathing in hostility, infecting with ease. No antibiotic, no quick fix. Generations exist that still need to be fixed. And when you stay silent, you promote the violence, so don't get bit. Rabies and racism kill the mind of innocence. And to that I say, get yourself a good book. If you have not read the New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, I would say anybody with a open mind and open heart towards change and transformation, find out what's going on in this country, and let's keep it real. And thank you, everyone, for partaking in this podcast today. I love and respect everyone here for taking their time out to share. And everyone, have a good afternoon. Until the next time, continue to speak your piece and read books.
That was From a Poet's Point of View, featuring artists organized by Speaky Piece NC and presented by WHQR. We hope you enjoyed this podcast, and we encourage you to explore some of the other perspectives we've featured here on WHQR Presents. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for listening. Fantasy, far from reality. Poetry is the language of imagination. Poetry.